Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
And welcome into the Monday edition. Robbie and Rex showed here on 102.5 The Game, broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership where the buzz is always about great service. I'm Joe Rex showed. Robbie Stanley off again today, and we again welcome our friend Paul Kuharski in for Robbie. I hope that, you know, this the size of this pop that's sitting in front of you is sufficient today.
It's pretty good.
I don't know what else I
can
do for you,
pal. It also tastes good. So you got the combination of taste and size down, and it only took what, Ian? Three months?
A month or two at least.
Yeah. Sometime.
Yeah.
So congratulations on finally getting it done.
Yeah. I mean, you know, maybe you should focus on like the positive, but of course, you know, you have to go right to like how long it took or what, you know, like maybe just, you know, be appreciative and enjoy your pop. Okay. And thanks for being with us.
For finally getting done. Good to be here as always. Very exciting times.
Yes. Very exciting times. It's August now. So we are. Well, what is today? Today is, and we're going to get into this later in the show, the MLB deadline, I believe, correct?
It is.
So
your team bailed.
Yes, they did.
Even before the deadline.
Yep.
Feeding the beast. Everyone thanks you.
Yeah. There's a lot of takes have spun out of that.
Is it the arm or the knee that's an issue for him?
I don't know anything about a knee. Yeah, it's the arm. Yeah.
I still say, put this on wax. It's not going to hold up. It's going to be a problem, and this will be a failure of a trade. It's smart.
For the Dodgers, you're saying?
Yeah.
Failure of the
trade,
yeah. And they'll still probably win it all.
Arm surgery. I stay away.
Yeah, I understand that, and that's the thing. I mean, again, we can get into it later. There's Tigers fans absolutely freaking out about the return, and it's like, I don't know what
you people
expected.
What is the rating of the return?
Well, I mean, look, they got a top 25 MLB prospect, outfield prospect, a couple pitchers of one, I think, can go right in the rotation. I don't – at this point, I don't know what people expected. Now, obviously, you were hoping for a big bidding war, but it seemed like all these other teams just didn't even want to get serious about it, you know?
They said, let the Dodgers go first, and then we'll deal with the rest of the handleable market.
Yeah, I guess. And again, it wasn't like this insane return. There were a couple of prospects the Tigers wanted, or at least people were talking about. This is their fifth. This is their number five prospect that they got. But again, top 25 MLB prospect, couple pitchers. I don't have a problem with that.
Kevin Gausman, a pretty good starter, a guy you'd want throwing game one or game two in a playoff series, got like nothing in return for Toronto. Really upset about that return. Two guys with like no power potential. So in that regard, you know, the LA, the Detroit did great. Now obviously another level pitcher they're dealing, but I hope that says something. Yankees so far dumped two guys that they needed to get rid of.
Do you have a dream scenario today?
Got to have a catcher, and I hope it's not a platoon guy, a full-time catcher, and a reliever, hopefully with more than the remainder of this year on his deal. And then they really need three guys. They need a catcher, they need a reliever, and they need a bat, a real bat. I mean, they're without Stanton, Judge, and Bellinger right now. I mean, that's ridiculous.
That's funny because
they're scoring three.
Funny because the Tigers have a couple really, rising stars or starting catcher, but this other young kid who's starting to really master them too. But I don't think we're giving you either of those guys. So.
They should also be willing to trade anybody but Lombard, who's their top shortstop in the system. And I mean, if anybody likes Spencer Jones or Jason Dominguez at this point, they should ship them in a second.
Ian, well, of course, Ian, looks like Ian's occupied. I real quick, do you have any interest in the MLB? Are you a Mets fan, too?
You know, I'm a little bit torn baseball-wise. I don't know if I have a true
baseball team. Yeah, you have a true team. They just suck.
Yeah,
I see you talking to TD.
More of a Mets guy. Well, that's a lot of Mets love.
My dad's a big Mets guy, but my grandmother was a big Yankees fan. She watched pretty much every Yankee game, and I watched a lot of Yankee games with her. So baseball, I'm really torn. I don't have a true team.
Well, you'll have
baseball.
One. You'll have one,
you
soon.
So,
you'll have one soon. When they come here.
I don't really care about the baseball trade deadline. Tuned out of baseball
Nashville's
a lot.
Nashville's a done deal. Who was that?
Well, yeah, we talked about Passan? This last week.
Yeah, it was Passan.
Yeah, Passan, and this was Utah. I think it was Salt Lake Tribune, I guess. But yeah, he said, they're like, who's, because obviously Salt Lake City is of high interest. Oh my God, why don't you just pour that into the microphone, man?
Sorry, I'm thirsty.
That was
the straw through the cup top.
Karski slurping on air right as we start the show. No, but he was asked about, there's a lot of intrigue on the other expansion, but he's like, Nashville's done. Yeah, it's over. Like, that's happening. Forget about it. And it's like, okay. That seems to be the MLB stance. Like, but then we still have to see how it all.
Who?
Yeah, who? Yeah, exactly. Like, there's still some things that
present. Billionaire.
There's some information that needs to come together for that.
Baseball here sounds interesting in that I wonder, such a transplant city. Pretty much everybody here already has a baseball team, right?
It's going to be a rough go in terms of that.
It's going to take some time.
Yeah, that's true. I do think. I mean, I think it's a lot like the Preds where. It's like this is people, these people here were here from, Detroit, Chicago, whatever. This like becomes your second favorite team. And then, over your kids, maybe it's their favorite team, right? I mean,
it seems even a bit more extreme.
And obviously the hope is, of course, you got to have a good, you got to have a good place. You got to have a good product.
It's got to be a good night out. Baseball's got to be a good night out.
It does. And the hope is because of the tourism that's going to be, that'll take up a chunk too, right? Like that will give you some attendance built in that it's like, oh yeah, this is great. But to me, that then, if that's part of the idea, that makes it essential that you're as close to downtown as possible, as opposed to out in Franklin or wherever else, Antioch.
Doubles down that you need a billionaire.
Right.
I don't know about it as part of a tourist experience. It's one thing for the Raiders, but for a football team, you could go out and see your football team on a given weekend. I mean, some people are going to travel baseball team for a weekend in the summer. That's fun.
But 81 games.
But you're not coming to Nashville, like, independent of baseball and saying, oh, the thing to do here is go see a baseball game. Because most of the places you're coming from, you can see a baseball game.
Yeah. It's interesting. And I totally hear that. It's also funny we're talking about this. Right after, this weekend. So Caroline Rexroth had a big Sweet 16 party. So we did it down here. We did it like in Germantown. Okay. Got like Airbnb thing going on with like 20 plus kids. And yeah. But point being, walking around, it was like quite a scene, just at the Sounds game, And I know it's a Saturday night. And it's not a big, but still I was like there's a, it was a buzz and there was a big crowd going to that game, and obviously minor league baseball, they do a great job over there. It's a good night out. But you do see that, and just with the overall population growth, I can see, again, that's in a great location. So you can come from different areas, you can walk around, you can do a lot of different things and also go to that game. That's why it's key. But I can see how it could work, right? If you have a good spot and you've got a team here, I don't think MLB is this clearly rabidly interested in Nashville for no reason.
Oh,
right?
Absolutely not. We're at the Sounds game Thursday night, and something I've never seen before. They were losing 5-4 in the ninth, and threw their shortstop, who was averaging like 53. So apparently their pitching was a real mess coming into that game.
And how do you do?
Gave up a solo home run. They lost, and then grounded out to end the game, and they lost 6-4.
Oh God, he made the last
with
out
men
too,
on base.
Huh?
With men on base.
You said he was capping out at 53 in the fastball?
No, he topped out at 70 something, okay. But he was throwing mostly 53.
Did he try an Ephus pitch in there?
No.
No?
I was talking to the bullpen guys of the other team, and I was like, why on earth are they throwing a position player? And he said, I think they're out of pitching.
Did he have any, like, did he throw any breaking stuff?
I mean, was
53 a curveball at least?
53 was like, I'm throwing this to get it over the plate.
Like it was his changeup. Okay.
Never seen a team throw a position player that close to winning.
When you're actually in the game when it's not a total blowout, yeah. But, man, it's minor league ball, man, you know. Player development. Dude, are you seriously going to slurp on the air this whole show?
Can you hear that?
Oh, absolutely. Ian, how much of the slurping is crackling through the microphone right now?
The hell, just a tad.
See, Ian's kind.
I think that gives people a reason to get out of bed.
Yeah, exactly.
Get up, and you too.
It's natural sound.
Have some caffeine. Ambient sound.
Man.
So you bought me a drink, and it's apparently a very noisy drink. Fail again.
Apparently you just love it. I think it's a big win. I mean, you love it so much you can't even, like, you're like mid-sentence and you're slurping it. So that's exciting.
Very thirsty.
Okay, we will talk Tennessee Titans because, you know, Paul Kaharsky covers the Tennessee Titans. We'll have a lot of that. We will also get into the college sports mess later in the show. We will do a little bit more on the trading deadline. I have to vent a little bit about my loss to Eric Skubal. Corey Curtis at 8, as always, on Monday. Then when we'll come back, we're going to get up, caught up from with PK on what happened with the Titans in recent days. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. The Robbie and Rex Road show is presented by Green Ventures Landscaping. Get thicker grass, better color, and fewer bare spots with turf application. Visit greenventureslandscaping.com. Welcome into Reaction Monday here, by the way, on Robbie and Rex Show, which is brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors of Nashville. Paul Kaharsky in for Robbie. And basically, it's been kind of quiet. You've had a little bit of downtime here, huh? A little bit of rest.
I mean, you can't call it downtime because you're always working ahead on something. I should have gotten into Belmont stuff yesterday, and I didn't. But, yeah, I mean, when you're not out there, there's 2 out of 3 days. Yeah, you can call it downtime.
So Saturday was a full day, and apparently it was packed. The fans showed up to enjoy. So on Friday and Sunday, is that one of those just you guys weren't welcome in,
no,
or they were off?
Friday changed from a regular practice to two walkthroughs.
To walkthrough day.
So there's, you know, neither side has any interest in us watching a walkthrough. Wouldn't mind the availability. Yeah, yesterday was a regular day off. Today is the first day in pads. Robert Saleh actually threw out, last time we talked to him, that the first couple days in pads never really go that well, and it's not that good.
Never really go that well, meaning what?
I have to find the quote. It'll take me a minute to find the quote, but made it sound like don't have high expectations about great practices.
So he expects sloppy. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I mean, I guess there's probably some truth to that. Right? Yeah.
But he's downplayed a lot. Like, well, the acclimatization period's boring. You ramp up, and now we get to the pads, and he's like, yeah, the first couple of days of pads are really not good. So, well, wait for the good stuff.
Yeah.
Pay a lot of money to go to San Francisco to watch that one practice. I'm hoping there's a payoff on that one.
Yeah. Yeah. Is that they only have one?
Yeah. All of the scrimmages or the joint practices are just one day. He believes in one day. He thinks the second day, then things start to get
like too chippy. Yeah. That it does feel like the second day. Well, that's too bad though. That's tough. It's like you get used to like the rhythm of like, okay, I'm gonna watch offense this day, I'm gonna watch defense this day. Gotta pack all into one. Also, I mean, it's a lot of, like, with the Niners trip, it makes sense because you already had a scheduled preseason game out there, so okay. But typically with these things, a lot of them are just scheduled on their own, you know? Is that worth it?
Well, what do you mean scheduled on their own?
Well, in other words,
they're generally scheduled ahead of preseason games.
I thought that there are some that aren't they just
Bears,
joint?
Bears and Panthers are scheduled ahead of preseason games here.
Yeah, okay. Maybe I'm wrong about that.
Seattle.
Am I
believe.
Completely wrong about that?
Not Panthers.
Seattle. I thought that. Sorry. It seems like there have been some where it's like we're just going to do the practices. There's no game attached to them. Like when the Bucs came here, I guess that was a few years ago, but that wasn't a preseason game, was it? I don't think so.
I think it was.
Was it? Okay. Well, anyway, one One day is better than nothing. What about the one day of practice that you saw in the last three? What are the things that
burn in your brain from Saturday? The one big thing that's standing out to me there that I haven't written about in a big way yet, talked about some on my pod, is Tajay Spears. Tajay Spears is getting a lot of throws, design screens and maybe outlet dump offs. He looks terrific, dancing and darting and stopping and starting and hopping around. But how much can you believe in that? One, you're doing it against, your own defense. I don't know what that means. But the Titans are not have never been a good screen team. And we've seen plenty of good screens in practices at this time of the year. So I'm curious. We will talk to coordinators at some point this week to talk to Brian Daboll about what their intent is with screen game. I've talked to a lot of coaches about this over the years, and they talk about how much you have to commit to it, how much you have to practice it, and I'm curious how much is it a worthwhile trade-off with all they have going on the offensive line to spend that time getting good at screens when they've got a lot of other matters to take care of. And also, I don't find Tajay Spears to be a particularly dependable on the availability front. He's missed 9 games over the last 2 years. I don't think they have another guy who can do it the way that he does it. You could do some of that stuff with Wandale Robinson, obviously. He had one very bad day, by the way, in this last run.
Wandale, yeah.
But I'm curious about that element. Titans running backs in the passing game are always kind of a curiosity. I mean, Derrick Henry had a lot of success as a pass catcher, but it's because he was such a good running back, not because he could track the ball well or was a great
misdirection running plays, really, right? Yeah. Like those throwback screens probably got him about 2/3 of his yardage as a quote-unquote pass catcher.
Yeah, they talk up Pollard in this regard, but, he's slowing down. He wouldn't be my primary option there. And I don't know that any of these other backs, we have to wait and see about Singleton, but certainly the other guys aren't people you want to throw to, I don't think.
Well, I was going to ask you about Singleton and Mullings too. I know Mullings has had like one big run, but what are your thoughts as you look at those guys? And I think obviously another camp hero is Julius Chestnut. I mean, Julius Chestnut, and Mason Kinsey,
Mullings and Chestnut.
They're up in the ring of honor just for their training camp work with the Titans. But, yeah, what your thoughts about those guys as you compare them to the top two backs?
Mullings in particular, is first and foremost a short yardage guy. A short yardage guy isn't going to thrive in camp. He's certainly not going to thrive in camp before they get to 9-on-7.
Am I wrong that he had a big run? I thought he had a big run.
Drills. He might have had one big run. Chestnut looks the same, maybe even thicker. Singleton, he's done a couple things. One thing he's not doing, which is, to me, bad for a rookie. It seems like it should be quickly corrected and hasn't been. Running backs are supposed to finish their runs. No matter where they hit you or whatever, you're supposed to run, 75 yards with the ball, and he's not doing that. Another concern I have that I want to talk to Daboll about, it doesn't seem like the play-action fakes are even like – how some teams, like, not everybody's Peyton Manning, where every play of practice you're putting the ball in the running back's belly and removing it and all of that, though probably every team should. But these guys, just wave the ball in the area of the back sometimes, and it doesn't seem to me like it's even intended to be very convincing.
Ball handling and run fakes are underrated. It's like a pitcher, the defense of a pitcher. No one ever talks about it, but actually, if you're a good fielding pitcher, that saves you runs.
Jim Cott. Right?
There you go. Good run fakes. It's good. It's a nice thing to have as a quarterback. This would be the time to.
I wonder if they'll be defensive. I wonder if they'll be defensive about that, or say I'm wrong, or say they're not there yet, or what. But to me, it's very noticeable, especially Levis. So we'll see.
Well, we're going to talk about Levis later. You know, he's just somehow becoming this a massive newsmaker, which I think probably says something about a bigger picture thing, you know, as much as it says anything about him. Io Manner is another guy who seems to be, if there was an arrow up.
Yeah, he's making some plays. He's kind of, I would say arrow up. He's coming on a little bit. You know, I've got a piece coming up this week. Like, even if Io Manner's arrow is up, what's it take for him to get the kind of snaps? You know, one big catch in a game could be significant for Io Manner. But I'm not convinced he's going to find himself any kind of regular snaps as long as things are going okay with the top guys. He's coming in after somebody runs a long route. And, yeah, they want to mix it up and stuff, but are you going to be – if the top three guys are doing well, do you want to see one of them out of the game for Io Manner?
No, but I expect some injuries. And, I mean, I have my questions about Calvin Ridley. Why the heck is he getting ripped by Steve Smith, by the way? What's this
I have
about?
No idea what that's about.
Yeah, what's that all about? I thought people liked Calvin Ridley. Steve Smith apparently does not like Calvin Ridley. But if Ridley gets hurt, and he's the most likely, is Io Manner who well, gets those
DK,
snaps?
I think DK would be the first one to get.
You think DK gets them over Io Manner?
I mean, he certainly ended last season ahead. Now, we have to see how these guys do with this coaching staff in terms of the pecking order and the like. And it's a little – I mean, it's a lot early to see. But the receivers look good in training camp. Lifelong story. So,
right.
Have to see what you do, when it matters, and what it means.
Yeah,
I look forward to you reading my piece on this.
I look forward to also doing it so that – you can look forward to that too, but no, I think Io Manner. I think DK clearly. You know, I mean, the speed difference is there, right? Like that's just one thing. But that physicality, like, what does Daboll value? You know, in these spots. I mean, everybody values speed, but also the ability to go up and physically beat a defender and high point the football and things like that. I mean, that's what Io Manner is, right?
Yeah.
How much is that valued?
I mean, they're both
and it's
both
and it's a little different from both Ridley and DK in that way.
Yeah, they're both promising, and the hope is that one or both of them can this season, if and when Ridley fades or gets hurt, and certainly next season when Ridley is highly unlikely to be on this roster, can become him. But it's also somewhat of a big projection, you know, fourth rounders. Somewhere around the league, you know, if you're Amon Ross St. Brown, you do it.
There's some guys. There's others.
But they're also, you know, Des Fitzpatrick.
Sure. But, I mean, these guys have already demonstrated that they can play. At some point, that matters less, right? Make sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel, 102.5 The Game, for live shows and exclusive content. Also, hit us up in the game phone or text line, 615-737-1025, driven by WilsonCountyHigher.com. I've completely ignored all chats. I hope there's a lot of celebrating / ripping PK. We'll get to that, your thoughts, and more on the Titans.
Celebrate.
Coming up next, Robbie and Rex Show, 1025 The Game. That's right. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Show. Text line, there's a lot of angry Tiger fans. Sorry, folks. And some people complaining about Pop. I mean, Pop's not going to stop. Dylan and Antioch, I'm sorry. I don't know what to tell you, buddy. And a lot of
how are there so many Tigers fans, or is this a revolt against the Dodgers?
Well, there's some of both. Well, there's people from all over around here, Paul, as you know.
I know, but not so many Detroiters that listening at 6:30 in the morning.
You just don't know, man. You don't know the power of our listenership. And on the YouTube chat. We've got, yes, people definitely heard your slurping, by the way. But
you're welcome.
Jabari Martin's mentioning that, you know, Steve Smith broke down. Ridley is a, quote, speed merchant, not a good route runner. Might explain why he's had issues getting on the same page with his quarterbacks. So,
well, I think there's
some fairness there.
You can make
an
argument there at times.
Yeah. Like, I don't think that's unfair, but it just seemed a little bit, you know. Kinda.
Well, Steve Smith has always got an edge to what he's offering up.
Yeah, and sometimes seems a little
He's an angry guy.
Yeah, a little, I don't know. I'm not a big, not a huge fan. He's okay, but
how are you on Ryan Clark and Fred Taylor? They were out there the other day. Chatted with them a bit.
Ryan Clark, I thought he's fine. He's okay.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, sometimes I agree with him, sometimes I don't. I appreciate his willingness to give an opinion. You know, I mean, probably my biggest complaint. It's like you got the complaint that we always have about ESPN, like, oh, everybody's screaming, arguing, hot taking, all that stuff. But then really, to me, like the totally other side of the spectrum is like a guy like Pat McAfee, who actually never argues with anyone or has an opinion, really, right? And just sort of glad hands with everyone. I feel like, you know, at least Ryan Clark was willing to, you know, have a strong opinion. So
I didn't have huge beef with him. But I have to say, like, I don't know. Are people watching NFL Live on a regular basis to have strong feelings about these people? Aren't people working at 2 o'clock in the afternoon or 3 o'clock in the afternoon when these shows are on?
But that show has done really well, but it's with the core group of
Rutledge.
Rutledge running it. Mina Kimes,
Orlovsky.
Spears, and Orlovsky. Like those four, and then like Clark would be on there sometimes, but those four.
I think those four are pretty
good chemistry. Yeah, good chemistry, good show. And good discussion and good, like, technical breakdown of football, right? So, but, yeah, I mean, to your point, it's still middle of the afternoon. But, you know, people, you can get everything on demand nowadays. So that's why, like, we get texts during the show where it's, like, an hour behind the show or whatever. You know what I mean? I mean, that happens, too. So people digest things when they want to digest them. We've been talking about the receivers. We have gone this far into the show, 6:34, without just mentioning the quarterback, Cam Ward. How did he play Saturday?
I think, you know, he's been so-so so far throughout, which, you know, is not a tremendous cause for excitement, but I don't think you could shred him for it either. Just kind of is. You know, been some good moments and some bad moments.
Some misses.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in your lifetime of covering quarterbacks in camp, I probably asked you some version of this multiple times, but how much correlation have you seen? Because first of all, I know that there are some players that just simply aren't good practice players and they're just good in they're good in the game. There are players who are better in practice, and then it's like, where the hell is this on Sunday? But quarterbacks in camp and the translation to the season. How much do you find that to be a thing?
I think for the young guys, you know, it correlates more often if you're, you know, still haven't gotten to where you're going to be. It's not so much because, like, oh, he had a bad camp, so he had a bad season. You're just not very good yet, and so you're not very good yet.
Right, like you can see, yeah, or I mean, you can kind of see what a guy is to some extent, right, once you get through a camp. I mean,
but the year Mariota threw, you know, we have this conversation all the time, you know. And who was it? Rodgers came out lately and talked about, you know, it's good to throw interceptions in camp and all of that stuff,
right.
Which kind of took the cam side of it. You know, you're working on stuff and all of that.
But
if
you're established.
Right, I think so, too. And there was a huge deal made of the year that Marcus Mariota didn't throw any picks for a huge stretch in camp. I don't remember. Did he have a good year after that?
What year was that? I think it was after his best year, right? Because his best year was 16. Broke his leg at the end of that year.
It was never the same after that.
Really wasn't. So I think the no pick thing might have been the next year, actually.
And I think, you know, there were some arguments during that. Like,
does he take enough chances?
Yeah, he's not throwing. Does he take enough chances? He should be throwing a couple picks. So you want the warm in the middle, not the hot or not the cold.
But with Cam, it's not. It's not picks or not. It's more that throw was right there and where'd it go?
Yeah, the other day, I think it was the last practice we saw. They were regularly missing like throws to the outside where it just seemed like they weren't in sync. There was a cornerback in good position. The throw was, you know, they've got a line drawn on the field 5 yards in from the sideline. And they, you know, multiple staffs have talked about they want the receiver to win that red line, which means win your route with that 5 yards of space outside where you own that space and you can play with a ball that a quarterback throws outside of you there. Well, they weren't doing that the other day very, very often. And so, and it wasn't just a matter of Cam unsuccessful throwing deep down the boundary. Some of these balls were people cutting to the outside as opposed to running a boundary route. But they just didn't have ownership of that territory of the field. He didn't. Levis didn't. And it just seemed like, you know, I think some of it still is option route stuff. And we watching together on the sideline, you know, it could be next to Suss or next to TD or next to Wyatt. Sometimes these plays don't work. And we'll say, well, was it the throw or, you know, there was some space where the receiver sure. might have gone. And you just don't
know. I mean, the slightest the slightest lack of being on the same page in some of these plays can make a throw that might not be errant look errant.
And I wonder if there wasn't some kind of consistent theme going on with what they were doing there, given that the mistakes looked similar. So now today I look, you know, are they significantly different in those spaces as to having made some kind of adjustment to it? We'll see.
Yeah. So back to the big question, just on the, you know, your history with quarterbacks, Young. Okay, Locker. I imagine that you saw that dude in practice, like, man, he can't hit the broadside of a ball, right? Like, the whole time. Right?
Constantly
consistent.
Inaccurate. Constantly inaccurate. Constantly missing, like, short guys. Like you know, screens and dump-offs and stuff where guys had to bend down to catch balls at their knees reach up to just not putting guys in good spots.
I could not believe that pick. You know, like, if you watch that guy, watch him, like, great athlete, but what? Like, crazy. Vince Young.
You know, erratic, but with some real highlight moments, you know, I think.
Well, yeah.
There was one at Clarksville.
That's his career.
There's one at Clarksville, which I think was his rookie year, where he threw a pick to somebody, and the guy was coming back at him, and he basically leveled the guy. With the shoulder, like, way too physical and aggressive, but was a real, like, message sender, maybe the moment of that camp that told you something about his mindset at that stage.
Yeah. At least being on the field, good mindset. Yeah. Not getting to the field. So everything – oh, it's about, I guess, what you'd expect. If Cam – if Cam were – having massive day where it's like, oh my gosh, it's surgical out there, people would be making a big deal out of it, right? Yes. They'd be making a bigger deal out of it than if he were really struggling.
Well, I think either extreme would be getting a lot. And I think right now it's just kind of meh, which is maybe why it's not getting a lot. Also, you know, we're finally talking to more people, a wider array, and getting some interesting stories, be it about Levis. I thought Latham was really interesting. And, you know, we're starting to be able to introduce you to some guys. Like, I talked to Jacob Martin, or, you know, somebody else talked to Schlotman for a long conversation. And we'll have to write Cam every day.
Yeah. No, you don't have to write him, of course. But it's the number
the
number one thing people care about, want to hear about, want to know about. But when we come back with first day of pads, one thing that I have to admit I'm a little, well, maybe more than a little concerned about. We'll get into that with PK. Robbie and Rex Show, 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Show, 102.5 The Game. Now, here's a great artist, PK. You probably have some problem with his voice or something.
Dude, I love Neil Young. The Hat Show posters you see behind me when I podcast, I've got Springsteen and the Stones right next on the side is Neil Young. Seen him 4 or 5 times.
Okay. All right. I feel better, even though your Geddy Lee criticism.
Russ Never Sleeps was like one of my big albums right at the beginning.
Nice. I'm proud of you. How's Sal like in Nashville media as opposed to New York media?
he's doing well to make a point of telling us he likes us.
That's nice.
Yeah.
There's
one guy in town who's really, really buying it.
Oh, yeah?
I'm starting to like Sal. Really. Yeah, he's putting up with me, playing along with my stuff. I really like him.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's everybody's friends.
Hypocrite.
I think that's exciting.
Like, oh, the only reason Paul likes so-and-so is because he's good to him. Ah, you know what I think today? I'm really liking Sala. That guy's cool. I like him.
I have no idea who we're talking about here, but I like your voice impressions. So first day of pads, first of all, Latham talked. It was interesting. Like, I always find J.C. Latham interesting when he talks.
This was some of the best J.C. Latham. And listen, I know it doesn't mean anything until we see how he puts it into practice. But we've talked a lot this offseason. I love these stories that give us some kind of wrap on our offseason theme. And my Latham thing has been, which guy do we get? The more mature guy who said, hey, I played too big. I need to lose weight and come back slimmer. Who took that on himself without any coach telling him mm-hmm. that, or the guy last season who seemed disconnected from the team, who teammates were clearly talking about not listening to veterans and who slipped into like some penalty craziness. He said at the end of last season, I need to get my mental stuff in order. And I was very eager to talk to him about how you do that in the offseason when you're far removed, right, from the mental strains of the game. And he came back and he had a press session. I got a couple minutes with him after that. He told me about what he's reading. He told me about, listen, there's only so much weight I can move. Like, there's only so much I can gain now as getting stronger. My game's got to transform on the mental level. And I started with the mental coach late last season, and I've read this stuff. And we're talking about neural pathways with Brasillo and just listing off this stuff where he sounds like he's got a handle on what he's got to do. Now, does that hold up in battle? I don't know. But he knows what he needs to do. And that sounds like a huge jump in maturity to me from an offseason. And if I'm a Titans fan right now, thinking that J.C. Latham is a pivot point on this team, which I think he absolutely is, I'm excited about what I heard from him this weekend.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I think that makes sense. I mean, some of this also, and again, I have no idea. You talk about preparation, right? Preparation for opponents, things like that. Doing stuff on your own. Kevin Byard probably be the ultimate example here of like a guy who set the standard of like, you know, we do all this stuff at the building. But if you're not finding stuff on your own, like you're not maximizing yourself as a pro. So that's
this plugged right into that to me. Right. Yeah,
that's important. That's obviously important. J.C. Latham to me has always been impressive in terms of his, you know, I mean, he's always been a really thoughtful, I think, quote. He just hasn't been an impressive player. Sometimes he just doesn't translate, but he is someone you would expect to be looking for solutions and be fully in on, you know, giving it a go. I mean, this year is going to say a lot about the rest of his career.
And look, we don't like it when a first rounder comes in and isn't the guy that we expect him to be right out of the gate, right? But we talk about it all the time with quarterbacks. You know, it takes time, maybe a second stop for some guys, all of that. Well, it happens at other positions too, you know. And Latham comes in as a seventh pick overall, and he's not been what you want him to be through those first years. But if the light switch is coming on for him in a different way now, and he does turn out to be the guy you want, then we might laugh at ourselves about our doubts of him early. If he turns in to, you know, I don't want to say Jack Conklin-esque because Jack Conklin made two all-pro teams, right? One of them here. And that might be a little high. But if he turns into a top 10 right tackle in the league, a dependable guy, if he doesn't suffer the hip strain and the pec injury and he minds his P's and Q's, and he's a communicator, and he's got more of a teammate attitude, where he's not a little bit of an isolationist, but more of a, hey, I need to emotionally connect with these guys, which he talked about too. And he realizes all of these things, and those all contribute to him being a better player. Then I think we say, you know what? Respect to that guy. It took him a while to get it. It's complicated business. You would have rather him come in and dominate on week one, right? But if he gets it 3 years in and he solves the problem, it's been a problem for a damn long time.
Well, yeah, if, yeah. I also feel like
– it's talk right now.
It's talk, and, you know, you can have the right intentions.
And then somebody punches you in the mouth.
Yeah, you know, like with people are right, like Skoronski, obviously year three last year, really he took off. But there was a lot of positive momentum from year two, way different to me than Latham.
Yeah, no, absolutely true.
Who is the leader of the offensive line?
I think it's got to be Skoronski. I mean, it's a different kind of leadership. He's not a rah-rah,
no.
Gather everybody up together. He's a look at what I do and do it kind of leader. Now, in terms of a vocal guy, nobody stands out.
Because
yet.
You talk about like the isolationist thing and teammate. To me, like the offensive line, usually, I feel like I'm most, like those guys are usually tight. I mean, they kind of hang with themselves, but they have their own little culture, right? And usually that's like strong. Like that aspect of it.
Still evolving.
Is good. Again, we go back to the good Titans teams, the most recent good stretch, and Ben Jones was clearly the leader.
Yes.
Right? And I think that ideally, if your center, a center as a leader makes sense, he makes the calls, like it just makes sense that if you can have that guy at center who's not only good but also is just like a natural leader, I think that's a great thing. And, of course, the Titans are, you know, they're trying to find someone who can play at center. Skoronski just, yeah – maybe he's on the verge of being, you know, a great player in this league for a while, which makes a big difference. But I don't think I think you need a bigger personality somewhere in there who's good, who's there for a while to help an offensive line gel and be better than the sum of the parts.
I agree. And it's an area where they're lacking, you know, up to this point. I don't think it's going to be the winner of Volson and Slater. Slater definitely doesn't have the personality for it. I haven't met Volson yet. Schlotman, you know, conceivably could do some of that. You have to play. I mean, I'm of the camp. You have to play to a certain level in order to be that guy.
Yeah, no, you do.
Vrabel was on the other side of that, and that's one of the things we battled about.
Well, here's the thing about Vrabel, you know, and it's funny because
he thought Deion Lewis was a leader.
Yeah, well, I mean, Vrabel sometimes just said stuff. But, like, he loved Aaron Brewer. And, of course, there's a lot of, oh, you know, this guy, this little guy out there and all that, tough as a $2 steak. But I do think that Brewer had some of that.
Well,
right?
Brewer's turned into a hell of a player in Miami.
He has. Avanzi's on the YouTube chat says, your left tackle needs to be a dog/goon. Center needs to be the QB. Honestly, I'll take a left tackle who's a technician who has the feet of a ballet dancer who never says a damn word. That's what they had with Lawan. Lawan was the loud mouth.
He said a lot of words.
Yeah, but he was the out front brash dude and a great player.
He's also a ballet dancer. Yeah.
Oh yeah, absolutely, and had all the skills. And then Jones led the team. I mean, you just need to me one guy. It doesn't have to be the center. It's just the natural place I think where it happens a lot. Who kind of brings everyone together. I don't know that being a really good player is enough there.
Them lacking that is part of why we still will have questions about the group, I think, even if the center and the right guard emerge in terms of functional play.
How after this week, get into pads, and you're going to start to see a little bit more of the reality of these guys trying to block the other guys. Pretty good, you know, some pretty good players on the other side. How do you think it's going to go for the offensive line this week?
I think that it's not going to go well for the offense, generally speaking. I mean, the defense is just better.
And defenses are often better at this point. But, I mean, I think this team has a better defense than it does an offense.
Yeah. I think that's generally the case across the board. Now, you have some receivers that can make some big plays. And you have Cam who can.
Yeah, well, he needs to. He needs to tilt it. He needs to tilt it.
Needs to help tilt it. I think that's the story.
When we come back, a guy who, I guess, can help tilt it for the twos or threes, made big news this week. The some of the biggest news in the NFL apparently was from Will Levis. We'll get into that next. Robbie and Rex Show, 1025 The Game.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.